Can you tell us about the string theory and what it tells us about other dimensions?
Yes, so string theory is, I would say, an example of speculative physics where it's not based on experiments that people are doing, but rather people trying to come up with, just using pure math, to find out if there are other ways to come up with physical theory that we know in order to solve certain problems. And so in some ways, string theory is not yet even really a theory. It's a set of efforts to think about how we might be able to come up with another theory. So at its basic level, the idea of the strings is just to say, instead of thinking of point-particle interactions and thinking of particles as little single points, to think of them as interactions along lines. And so the lines are like strings. And so probably the original interest in this is just to solve some of the problems of quantum mechanics that we don't really understand. One of the things that goes on in quantum field theory is that when you do certain calculations, you get infinity as an answer. And usually we don't like that in physics. We don't like what we call singularities, things where at certain points you would calculate just that you get infinity. And in the present standard way that we approach that, we'll just make cutoffs and say, well, instead of putting it infinity, we'll just put it at some finite but very large value and make a cutoff. And it seems somewhat arbitrary. So string theory at one level is just an attempt to solve some of those inconsistencies in the known quantum mechanics that we have. At another level, it's an attempt, I would say, in some cases, to get rid of fine-tuning. At this meeting, there's been a lot of discussion about fine-tuning. Some proposals for the string theory is to say, well, if we do physics right, then we'll be able to explain everything in terms of just geometry, and we won't have to invoke these fine-tuning constants. It's very speculative because they haven't done this, and yet that is sort of one of the attempts that they would like to do. And another thing they would like to be able to do with it is to be able to say there are these many worlds or parallel universes, to say there is one large super universe, and then our universe is like a subset or a bubble inside of this larger universe. So I guess I would say string theory is interesting, but it's really at this point what I would call speculative mathematics of trying to come up with alternate ways of defining physics. Now, the dimensionality part of it is interesting because that is actually not especially controversial in physics. When Einstein came along with general relativity, he treated time like a dimension. So we have three dimensions, length, height, and depth. And so we were used to three spatial dimensions. Einstein came along and said, well, there's a fourth dimension of time. And then we can talk about curvature of space and things like that. Well, once we started to add these extra dimensions for general relativity, then people said, well, why do we need to stop with just four? We could go on and add extra dimensions. And so that by itself is probably not especially controversial in physics. But again, it's speculation at this point of can we do the math that would make it work out to actually see something sensible if we had these other dimensions.
String theory, to me, sounds like a sort of a backdoor for materialism or atheism. Do you think so?
I would say a lot of people who are pursuing string theory are indeed pursuing it out of a theological desire to have a consistent atheism. But in general, in physics, there's two ways that theories have advanced, and actually both often work. One would be out of just experiments where people have data that they don't understand, and they adjust and come up with new theories to explain that data. So we could call that data-driven science. But there's another side to science, which you could call aesthetically driven science, where someone says, well, this theory just doesn't look very pretty, and I want to come up with a prettier looking theory. And actually, that has also been very successful. So for example, we were talking before about antimatter. The antimatter theory was proposed by Dirac before there was ever any observations of antimatter, but the equations would look very nice and symmetric if there was such a thing as antimatter. And so because the equations sort of look nice, then people went looking for antimatter. And you can go back to a number of other theories, even Einstein's theory of relativity. For many people, it seemed much more aesthetically pleasing than other alternatives. And so there's been this back and forth between data-driven science and you could say philosophical or aesthetical type science. And so then it gets into, well, what is aesthetically pleasing? What is actually something that we should find? And that, of course, very much depends on your theology, on your philosophy, and so on. And so, for example, some people would say it would be very aesthetically pleasing to have a universe which exists forever and never changes and has no beginning. But the data says otherwise. The data says that we have a beginning. And so while at one point people would have tried to create a theory that was an infinite and eternal universe, it simply doesn't agree with the data. So sometimes we have to put our aesthetic desires aside and say, well, the data tells us something different. In the case of string theory, at least some of the people who are doing it out of a desire to recover the eternal universe, to say, well, we have a beginning of this particular universe, but there are many other universes that are out there, and so really it's one much, much larger eternal universe, and then we have these small universes that keep popping up inside of that. And so in many ways, it really is being driven by aesthetic considerations of wanting something which is eternal.
So what is the purpose of science to you then? I mean, it should be aesthetical or it should be pragmatical or?
I actually think that the beauty of modern science is bringing both of them together. That when you are only being data-driven and practical and sort of saying, let's fit this, sometimes you can miss some of the underlying beauty that's in the laws of physics. So I think that actually God made the laws of physics in a beautiful way. The problem is that when we try to impose our own view of beauty in advance and say it must be the way that I think is beautiful, we often go very far wrong. And so back in the Middle Ages and even ancient times, people came up with very aesthetically appealing theories, only five elements, you know, air, fire, water, earth, and so on. And that had sort of an appeal to it, but it turned out to be wrong. And so the data kind of overturned that as people started to do chemistry and so on. So, but on the other hand, as I look at the history of physics, and I would say it's been back and forth, that sometimes you don't have any advance until you get new data and new experiments. On the other hand, sometimes you can be sitting and looking at the experiments for a long time and not getting very far, and then somebody comes up with a beautiful idea, and that beautiful idea actually unifies a lot of things and makes it easier to understand the data. So actually, you know, Einstein is a very famous saying of his that, you know, one of the most incomprehensible things about the universe is why it is so comprehensible. It's not at all obvious that our theories should match reality. You know, why should it be that actually beautiful theories tend to be true about the universe? It turns out that actually the aesthetic sense oftentimes drives us to a good theory. And I would say as a Christian, that's because, in fact, God made the universe beautiful and he used very nice laws. But we can go wrong if we insist it has to be beautiful the way I want it to be beautiful.
I think some scientists are very obsessed to prove their ideology. And it sometimes it seems like the scientific world is losing a lot of time and finance. So would you say that being just objective or following the creation would be much more logical and beneficial for today's science?
Yeah, I would certainly say that the idea of a dispassionate scientist who is just seeking the truth no matter where it is kind of a myth. And I would say most people these days in philosophy and in science would agree with that, that scientists very much passionately want the answer to come out a certain way. Now, that doesn't always mean they do bad science, because even if you want the answer to come out a certain way, you can still be honest when it doesn't come out the way you want. And so oftentimes people find surprises, things that are not the way they expect things to be, And they're honest about that. And they say, so for instance, the Big Bang Theory is an example where lots of scientists did not want the Big Bang to be true, but they were honest enough when the data was overwhelming to say, yes, there is a Big Bang. So this idea of sort of the neutral scientist who has no opinions, no desires, is not accurate. We all want it to come out a certain way. And I do think that we talked before about string theory. I would say string theory is an interesting effort, but I would say the amount of effort invested in it is probably far more than it deserves, because people see this as a way of explaining away all the fine-tuning that seems to point to God. And so even I would say, if that was not true, string theory would still be sort of an interesting thing to pursue, just to see if you can make it work. But my impression is the amount of effort put into it is very much driven by a desire to come up with a way of explaining the universe without any need for God.